a case can be made that Woodrow Wilson is the most evil, most counterproductive man to ever occupy the White House. And that's saying a lot, considering the scumbags that have infested that building. But you were speaking, Kirk, about Woodrow Wilson having a dream.
Yes. Woodrow Wilson had a dream, and he called it the New World Order. And he wanted to control the world, like most emperors. And he saw opportunity to do it. And one of the
just to put a little credibility here.
Sure. Okay.
Woodrow Wilson was the power by the fall of 1918, because the rest of Europe had spent themselves in this war into oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
And so America's was able, through deficit spending, to continue to have resources, or at least the impression of being able to supply resources. And so Woodrow Wilson imposed his 14-point plan, his New World Order, on the world. And he told the Europeans, you will either accept my plan, not just Germany. He says, you will either accept this plan, or you're all on your own. You can deal with the Germans on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So as credibility for the fact that he had a New World Order plan, if you read the history of how World War II came to a conclusion in 1918,
mm-hmm.
and the terms of that war and how it led to World War II, what Wilson's real plan was, it's emblazoned all over our history books.
All right. I'm going to talk a minute about the real seedy side of germ warfare.
Okay.
You could go for days on all these subjects, but this one is so disgusting. It just.
So Woodrow Wilson wanted to be the de facto world leader. The de facto messiah of the world.
Right.
And one of the tools that you say he envisioned deploying was biological warfare.
Yeah, he was approached by a Surgeon General whose name was Burgos, and when he approached him with a proposition, he said to him, "What if you could win the war in Europe and you could redefine all the boundaries, or even just create new countries?"
Mm-hmm.
And Woodrow, of course, thought that was a wonderful idea, and he said, what's it going to cost? And he said, well, it's going to cost probably about 20 million lives. These are government records from somebody had dug up, and I'm going, but it's pretty easy to prove this is the way it went. So they chose to go for it. Now, I want to put one little aside about the Surgeon General Burgos. What a lot of people don't know is when you are if you're a regular doctor, you sign on to the Hippocratic Oath. You pledge that, right? Which is, I will do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
When you're an Army doctor, you do not sign the Hippocratic Oath.
Okay.
When a Surgeon General tells you something, remember, he is not sworn to do no harm. He can do whatever he wants.
Okay. Oh, by the way, what does Yahweh have to say about swearing an oath, even if it's an oath to do no harm?
Anyone.
Don't do it. If you swear an oath to any human institution, then you have estranged yourself from God. That you have you have aligned yourself with evil. That's the opening stanza of the sixth proverb. So I just want to make it clear that if by listening to this, if for some reason someone thinks that swearing the Hippocratic Oath as a doctor is a good thing. Not from God's perspective, but being bound by nothing in terms of a moral code may be even worse.
Right. You know, Wilson did get most of that 14-point plan.
Oh, he did. He got all of it.
Yeah, except now the League of Nations is the UN.
Right, but that's just change the name.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But go ahead, Kirk. Yeah, well, here's a horror story that I dug up. And if you look hard enough, you'll find it, too. Apparently, the Army doctors had been working on the bird flu. Now, I did a little work on the side. It was interesting. Roy sent me something, not knowing what I was going to be talking about, but he sent me something that was quite interesting. What I studied was that all flus are bird flus, and they transferred from the dinosaurs, and then they mutated. And for hundreds of years, the Chinese people, just because they were such peasants, were living in rather squalid conditions in China. And they lived among their chickens and their pigs and pure squalor. You know, you have a lot of water when you're growing rice and little patties and so forth, and that's the subsistence of living there. And this, I'm talking hundreds and hundreds of years. And the flu was well developed in China. And most of these government doctors that I've discovered have were studying different flus and stuff in different diseases around the world, and certainly the ones in China. And what they were able to do is bring back the strands of that virus, and didn't know what to do with it. Well, I guess they did know what to do with it. I shouldn't say that, but the plans were to use that on the battlefields at this stage, where it brings us up to date. The Burgos, or one of his representatives, ordered the use of these samples on American troops. There's a they did it at Fort Riley, Kansas, in 1914.
Now, yeah, that was actually the second deployment of this disease, which, by the way, was very similar to anthrax today. The first deployment was 1 year earlier. 90% of the National Guard that were protecting America's southern border on horseback were rendered incompetent, incapable of action, and their horses too. It affected both the horse and the men, and it brought 90% of them to their knees, killed most of them, but. That was 1 year prior to the Kansas experiment.
And in that Kansas experiment, what they did is they had regulars, Army regulars.
Right.
They also had enlisted prisoners from San Quentin, very disposable people. To get them out, they could join the Army. Unlike any other time in early American history, they were not segregated, so they had a lot of African Americans as well.
And by the way, you know why they were in Kansas? What was happening? What was happening at this point? What happened at this point is that Woodrow Wilson had decided that he was going to create patriotism by creating all these patriotic images for Americans, and to glorify the military, he reenacted the reestablished the draft, and then he created this boogeyman. The boogeyman happened to be Germans, and so Americans by the millions were flooding into these military bases, these army bases, to sign up to go do their patriotic duty to go kill some Germans. And so there was this huge influx of young Americans into these facilities.
So,
and by the way,
great place to run an experiment.
Yeah, but by the way, I don't think. And I've done a fair amount of research in the last few days on this. I don't think that the disease was actually flu. I am quite certain that the disease that killed at least 50 million people, none of the symptoms were flu-like. It destroyed and caused internal bleeding of all of the organs. From the time that you caught it to the time you were dead was usually 24 hours.
Wow.
And the other part of it that is so interesting is that every avian flu epidemic has killed vulnerable young people that don't have immunity to children, and the old. This did not. This killed military-aged individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, a rate 20 times higher than the previous quote flu did.
That is correct. But the reason it was called the Spanish flu is because America became a censored nation. Woodrow Wilson took over the media by way of the banking interests to be able to sink without any prying eyes the Lusitania, to get Americans to rally around his desire to go to war. And so America was a propagandist nation. You could only say what was what the government wanted you to say. And so when this epidemic broke out in that Kansas base and then was spread, there was no concern over it in the military, no discussion of it in the military, and no public discussion of it. And so the reason it was called the Spanish flu is Europe had also become censored in terms of their speech, but Spain was neutral. And so Spain still had an independent press. And although Spain's death toll was minuscule by comparison to other nations, it was labeled the Spanish flu because it was the only nation in the world that was actually writing about it.
Well, the reason they were probably writing about it is because, you know, they disembarked tons of people there that were infected.
Mm-hmm.
Or were affected after the fact. They went over in boxcars. They went unrefrigerated boxcars with the dead as well. Mm-hmm. Spain agreed to allow them to disembark troops there because they, you remember, they had already been beat up pretty bad in the Spanish-American War, and we picked them.
Yeah.
And something to let them in.
Yeah, there you go. So they... And when the death became rampant there, by the way, you're talking about this test was in the spring of 1918. It's the summer of 1918 that America deployed troops in Europe in World War II. So immediately after, within 90 days of the pandemic, America is taking these same men that are dying by the tens of thousands and is infecting Europe with them. Deliberately, knowingly infecting Europe with them. And
he said, it cost you about 20 million lives.
Right.
But
so
you will find out.
It was a lot more than that. That's
right. It's going to be.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Right. And by the way, you know, of the Americans that died in the military, you know what percentage of them died of the flu?
You know, 100%.
The numbers range, depending on which source you read, between 60 and 80% of the Americans who died in World War One. They didn't die at the hands of the enemy.
They died from dysentery and
No. I'm not talking about they died from dysentery.
No. But I mean,
they died of this deliberate disease.
Deliberate thing, yeah.
Yeah, it was called it the flu, although its base was influenza, but it was a weaponized version of it.
I got a question for you guys here.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good question now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they make rock stars out of all these presidents. They build monuments to them, apparently.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, Woodrow Wilson has a library over there in Central Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all this nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Big
you
white
know, when
building.
This comes out, when things like this come out, and they're just factually known now, why the hell is not all the wealth from their families confiscated and everything else? It should be.
It should be.
These are you might criminals. Do it to the current ones.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. They're arch criminals.
They are.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, we are conditioned to believe that once you get something out to the media... media that they control, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That somehow this stops the process.
No, it doesn't. No.
No, it doesn't.
A lot of that is because of the fact that political correctness has rendered most people in America and Europe incapable of processing information and exercising good judgment regarding it. So it doesn't matter what case you make. The realization is that it doesn't affect people. Now, I'm going to interject here something, Kirk.
Yes.
Let's say that it's difficult to prove that America weaponized the flu.
Okay.
Even though it is absolutely provable that the United States was developing chemical and biological warfare agents at that time, as was Germany, as was France. As was Russia, and that there is ample evidence that America was one of those nations trying to do this, and their justification is, well, the other guys are doing it, so we need to be able to respond in kind. So America was developing biological and chemical agents to deploy in war at this time. No question about that. No question about the fact that this disease, this pandemic, was first introduced in with America's National Guard, and then when it incapacitated 90% of them and their horses, which at the time was the primary weapon of war, and it incapacitated 90% of them, it next made its way into a the military facility in Kansas, where troops by the tens of thousands were being recruited based upon the propaganda machine that Woodrow Wilson had established. These are all known facts.
Right.
Now, whether or not we weaponized it, whether or not we deliberately infected them, the fact is they were dying by the tens of thousands in America. We knew they were dying by the tens of thousands in America. The military knew it. The President of the United States knew it. Yeah. He knew that he had committed, he had drawn them into these military facilities on a pile of lies. And he knew he was, and he knew that he had arranged to have the Lusitania sunk to justify all of this. And he knew that he was doing it for economic reasons, for his New World Order. And so, at the very least, he knowingly infected the world with this pandemic that wiped out a minimum of 50 million people. And he did it knowingly and deliberately.
Well, these are monsters running.
Now, that's a hell of a coincidence.
Now that you cannot...
There,
so,
you know?
So whether or not you say that he actually had our military infect our own people with this disease, with these diseases, that's a question. Matter of fact, it appears, actually, this is what's really so interesting. It appears that the 90% of our
National Guard
mounted horsemen on the border who were infected and became incapacitated, that they were actually infected based upon a plot that a group of German Americans collectively had worked on. And that we witnessed the effectiveness of that, as did Germany. And then both Germany and America became the leaders in developing this capability because they saw in 1916. They saw in 1916 its overwhelming capacity to prevail. And at this time, Germany was motivated in this regard, because they knew if they launched their final initiative prior to America sending troops and machines over, that they would prevail. And so anything that they could do to diminish America's capacity to send troops over, they were all over. And so there is the real possibility that the Germans were complicit in this as well.
Except you have all these pictures from the Kansas of them, all these doctors examining all these people, and you have the record of the cook, whose name was Mitchell, who fed all these people. He was he was extremely sick. Mm-hmm. He served about 75,000 troops directly with his people.
Mm-hmm.
In Kansas, I mean,
what I'm saying here is that it appears that the Germans were responsible for the incapacitation of 90% of our National Guard, our mounted National Guard, and that the military and Woodrow Wilson took note of that.
Yeah.
And the next place that we see this, and it's equally deadly. In fact, it's even more deadly. Is in these camps that have been established for the patriotic recruits for World War One.
Yeah.
And what you're saying now is that in America's records, there's all sorts of affirmations that the Wilson administration deliberately infected Americans that were destined, that had volunteered and were destined to go to Europe with this disease, making them in effect that they were suicide bombers.
Yeah, well, that was Burgos's plan, Dr. Burgos. He said, I can help you do this.
Yeah.
I mean, you still got to send troops and all this sort of thing, but you can finance them. They just had it covered from every aspect they wanted. Now, depending on what results you want to read, though.
By the way, 500,000 Americans died of this disease. 500,000 Americans, at least.
Worse than that, because when the soldiers came back mm-hmm. and affected all the peripheral people, the nurses and so forth, came back, so many of them, we probably killed about 20 million people in America alone, which is an enormous population. They have pictures of the Red Cross because of the influenza, they called it the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
Because of that, and post-World War One, and the return, coincidentally, the return of the troops and these people, the cities, it was such a big epidemic, there were not enough coffins so they couldn't bury them. They were building them in mass graves. We have pictures of that. The Red Cross assisted in that. They built buildings on top of these people, these graves.
Oh, I'm reading in 1 month, in October of 1918, okay, 200,000
mm-hmm.
dead.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking
1 month.
Billions.
And there was a genuine attempt to A, mislabel this the flu, because it was much more deadly than the bubonic plague. Mm-hmm. You know, the Black Death. In the 14th century, it was not nearly this deadly. So they did not want to label it accurately for fear of alarming people. And communication was so controlled at that time that much of what occurred during that time was manipulated to keep people from knowing, A, what the cause was, and B, what the extent was.
Mm-hmm.
So it is difficult to know the number that were killed.
Well, here's the net results of all this,
mm-hmm.
all of the multiple factors. Between 1918, 19, and 20,
mm-hmm.
You can, depending on who you want to read, 100 million people across the world died from this, up to as many as 200 million, according to some government army records. Pick your number. But because, you know, it spread through Europe, it also came back to America. There was Africa, and it went to Africa, Asia, and even Russia.
You know, and the numbers that suggest that was 40 to 50 million people.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what country was by far the most victimized in the world in terms of the, let's call it, the official records?
Mm-hmm.
The United States was second on the official record list with almost 600,000 on the official records list. But they were just a tiny smattering of a country that was worst. What happened to Great Britain? What was their greatest loss at this time? Who were they most PO'd with? Who were they? They're just trying desperately to hang on to and to be able to continue to rob and rape for their very existence. What nation?
India.
Oh, India.
Yeah, so
India's the last big place.
Yeah. So India is the place that was most devastated by it.
No, imagine that.
Imagine that.
Say Africa and Asia and even Russia and all that. You know, they know these numbers. These numbers haven't been read from anybody.
Yeah.
You have to dig.
Yeah.
But then
they're not 12 million.
They're there if you look.
Yep.
So the net result after that is you have Woodrow Wilson. He gets to he's awarded what? The Nobel Peace Prize. God bless.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he forms the League of Nations.
Oh, by the way, of course, Nobel. How did Nobel make his fortune?
Newspapers, wasn't it?
No. Nobel is the fellow that figured out how to turn nitroglycerin into dynamite and therefore have a stabilized version of that explosive power, which then became the mechanism to fight wars where you could kill millions of people as opposed to, you know, thousands of people.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Nobel was one of the world's leaders in the manufacturing of war material. There's your Nobel Peace Prize.
Okay, for the.
You know, by the way, Yasser Arafat.
Yeah.
The terrorist who plagued Israel. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Jimmy Carter, who was a part of all of that. Right. Yeah. The guy that started the first Afghan war.
Yeah.
And then wouldn't go send Americans to Russia because of the Russians being bad in starting a war with Afghanistan when we in fact had started it. Yep. It doesn't paint a very good picture. So
because it'll help you understand the whole reason for this is because the reason I called in the second hour is all the time. It's a lot more fun talking about Yahweh than it is talking about our disgusting thing. But I think it's...
But Yahweh talks about our disgusting thing. He talks about human government. And it's about 40 to 50% of his attention is on the things that are wrong with human leadership, with human governance, with human religion, with human institutions, because... there is no way that you're going to do what is required to be part of the covenant, which is to, that's the prerequisite, to leave them. What's your motivation for leaving them, to engage in a relationship with a God you don't not yet know, unless you understand that these institutions are corrupt, evil, working against your interest? If you're putting your hand over your heart and singing the national anthem and you're waving your flag and you think America is just swell or that your church is a force for good in the world, then you're not going to walk away from them, which means that you have zero chance of participating in the covenant. So it's important that we expose this malfeasance, just as we know it is.
Just a word there, by the way, governance. That's a word I'm hearing more and more. It used to be government.
Yeah,
now it's governance. It's governance. So I really looked that word up a couple years back when I started hearing it all the time.
Uh-huh.
And it's really any position of authority over you from anywhere. That's what it really comes
down
to.
Governance. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was reading the first review that I clicked on for the Spanish flu. And what it said is that, in essence, the end result of it in America was a huge increase in the size of the federal government, a huge diminishment in the freedoms of the American people, a huge transfer of wealth from the people to the government, a monumental increase in the size of the U.S. military, a huge change from America only being interested in what was happening on this continent to Americans now meddling in the world as a whole, Americans being willing to give up their wealth and their freedoms to sacrifice for the collective good. That's how they ended this most popular article on the Spanish War, is that it was the fundamental change in America. Yeah, and the fundamental change.
That is bad.
Bad. The thing that turned America into the merchant of death for the world is Woodrow Wilson's scheme to get Americans into that war, and him making the death toll of that war many, many, many times greater as a result of chemical warfare, biological warfare.
I had a good friend that did his dissertation on the Versailles Treaty. And, his contention is that the Versailles Treaty led to World War II.
Of course. Well, I don't think it's anybody that doubts that. But, we blame the Versailles Treaty, the treaty that ended World War One, on the French and the British being greedy. But the terms and conditions that upon which Germany surrendered were imposed by Woodrow Wilson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He called the shots.
Yeah.
Now, I forgot a teaser I was going to put in. Mm-hmm. I know we're back to about 19, to post-World War One.
Right.
And I was going to lay out what...
By the way, what
added up the thing? But
other than salvaging American banks, and it's principally J.P. Morgan,
mm-hmm.
other than salvaging J.P. Morgan and America's now manufacturers of war materials,
Yes.
Which would have gone broke because they the lines of credit that J.P. Morgan advanced on behalf of England would not have been paid. They would have gone broke had Woodrow Wilson not engaged us in this war. So it benefited the manufacturers of war material, which the United States became the world's most dominant manufacturer of war material, still is by far, merchant of death. And it benefited America's banks by having Americans sacrifice their lives to shore up the money owed to those banks from the Allies in Europe. And we did all of that on a lie, sacrificing American lives for banking and industrial military interests. All as part of Woodrow Wilson's scheme for World War I.
Mm-hmm. Little teaser.
Mm-hmm.
Woodrow Wilson had a young man that he appointed to assistant of the Secretary of the Navy. He had a job. Do anybody know who he was?
Well, I can tell you the most influential individual.